Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. We are talking NXT for Valentine's Day 2023. I'm your host. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Two-man booth this week, which is fine, but it puts more pressure on me to think about things that I saw this week, which I don't remember any of. Like, I know that I watched this show, guys. I know that I did, but it might be just more accurate to say my eyes were pointed at the television while this show was happening. I don't know why this felt so bereft of content or intrigue or whatever it is. I'm gonna seek to find that out. But as far as I can tell, the very hot streak I thought they were on ended just in time for me to finally be able to come back and do this show. Our main event is Caden Carter and Katana Chance going against Roxanne Perez and Mako Satomura. A very, very obvious backdrop to get Mako Satomura into a championship match. They boldly pretty much told us what was going to happen, and then it happened. Straightforward tag match, 10 minutes and 26 seconds. Roxy wins with Pop Rocks and pins, I don't know, one of the other two. I'm going to say Katana. And then Mako said, hey, I did something for you. Now you do something for me. And points at the championship. Roxy says it'll be an honor. As main events go for this show, this was actually very straightforward. A lot of bigger hooks, bigger angles taking place lately, but not this time. This was straightforward stuff. These two are going to, well, I'm pretty sure it's going to be a roadblock, Bruce, because Vic said roadblock about 17 times, wedging it into every sentence he could, whether it worked or not. So there you go. Roadblock will be the site of Roxy versus Mako. That is going to be a real test to see how far along Roxanne Perez is, because Mako Satomura could not be farther along in how awesome she is. It simply is not possible. Bruce, let's talk main event.
Well, it was actually Carter who was pinned at the end. That aside, Kelly, so
I would have gotten it on my second try. I
second try, probably. I'm glad you wouldn't need a third on that one. So, the other thing is that, and now I lost what I was trying to say because you threw me off with that joke. Oh, Kelly, basically the visual equivalent of hearing but not listening tonight. So let's just get that out the way. I understand. It was a show that dragged a bit. I think it was just that we say that A to B booking and obvious stuff is good at times. Tonight, it just seemed that there was an abundance of that and also an abundance of segments in general. And I think you can have times where you let things breathe. And this was definitely not one of those times. Each segment just on the positive side, though, you know, each segment had a purpose. It served their purpose. But I think there were just way too many segments tonight, and I would have preferred maybe if they kept the same amount of segments but cut off a minute or two for each of them. Like that first Henley and the first segment with Briggs, Jensen, and Henley, I think was a couple minutes too long. I think if they did a bit better in that regard for tonight's show, it would have felt like such a drag. The main event, I felt like maybe because it was so straightforward and maybe because there was no really, they kind of took the heat away with the earlier segment between the two teams and things like that. I just felt like this was one of the more ho-hum main events you'll see on NXT TV, especially since they kind of made the shift in the summer to being away from what was staunchly 2.0 to more of a hybrid of what we knew as Black and Gold and 2.0. But the match did what we expected it to do, which was set up Satomura versus Perez, and they did confirm roadblock a little before that match happened. So there is a place for that to take place, but then that just leaves who are you going to have Perez face when it does come to Stand and Deliver. And if we're looking ahead, I wouldn't be surprised if they use that match, that spot, to have someone come back from NXT. And last week we talked about it. I wouldn't be surprised if you see someone like a Shayna Baszler come back and challenge her. Or I would like to see, after the Sada Moore thing, Asuka come back with her new, with her kind of return to Kana gimmick and challenge Perez at Stand and Deliver, of course, giving Perez the rub. But you know, that's looking ahead a little further. But I do think that what happened tonight, while the match served its purpose, I also think it just was kind of a neutral match and kind of a letdown to an otherwise neutral show. The show itself just didn't feel very, what's the word? And not every show has to be this way, but it just didn't feel like importance happened tonight, I guess, even though I said everything had a purpose. It's weird. It was a weird show.
Yeah, it felt like everything was building toward a major show 4 months from now, and they got all the time in the world to get everything ready. But as always, there's a major show in like 3 weeks, so there you go. I want to say more about this main event, but I simply can't find anything there. Other challengers for Roxy after this, because I think we do assume that she will walk out of this as the champion. I don't know. Maybe Blair Davenport gets figured in again. Maybe one of the witches goes singles for the purposes of this, but it seems like they're probably on a semi-fast track to the tag team championships. I don't know. Couldn't remember who the women's tag team champions were until now. it just occurred to me. And we saw them three damn times tonight.
They're feuding with each other.
Yep. You could have cut one of those scenes. Also, you could have cut all of them. This companies, it's like theater of cruelty is a real thing. You throw buckets of blood on the people in the first couple of rows. It was a real thing, and theater of cruelty exists in the form of giving Brooks Jensen lots and lots and lots of emotional beats to act. It's not what brings them to the table, folks. And you know who can kind of act? Josh Briggs. I just don't get it. But whatever. We've talked about Brooks having that idiot charm that has not changed. I do root for the guy, even though the acting isn't good. Okay, you can email us 515-605-9345. That's more of a phone number than an email address, I guess. Our email address is pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We are going to talk with our friend Ryan and see what he thinks of this week's show. Ryan, let's see if this thing stops circling. Thanks for holding, and what'd you think this week?
There was a lot going on. Probably a lot less critical than what you are of the show, since there's a lot of storyline development on this show, at least from my perspective of watching it.
It was just a lot going on.
It certainly we can agree that there was a lot going on. I don't know. I think it might be me tonight. I'm in a mood. I can't say why, and maybe I'll talk myself into thinking this was better. But go ahead.
First question is on Grayson Waller. I know this is a pretty long shot, but say like if Shawn Michaels would do a match with him, do you think it would be better than his last match he had with Kane and The Undertaker with Triple H, or do you think he's really gone downhill since then?
Not only do I not think it's a long shot, I think that this is where this is headed. Shawn could putting something out there as his proxy, but I don't know who that proxy would be. Like in storyline, there's nobody with obvious ties to HBK that's still regularly in the ring. I think it's got to be him based on what we saw in the post-Vengeance Day show and what we saw in this show. So your opener, Tyler Bate defeats Grayson Waller in 11:55 after a reverse. Waller tries to cheat to win using the ropes, and Bate rolls him up, gets the pin. Waller storms in on HBK. He's not having it. He's not happy. And that leads to a war of words, and we go with the worked shoot where HBK says to turn off, get the cameras off, go to break. I don't know. If this doesn't go to a match between these two, I don't know what else it could be. Could this be better than the match with the Brothers of Destruction? Yes, I don't think there's another option. It simply can't be worse. And I think that, I don't know what Sean can do and what his body did. Is nothing short of miraculous. Like the fact that he came back from the back issues that he had when he had to walk away after WrestleMania 14, and 5 years later he was able to come back. Like it is miraculous what happened. And now it's a lot of years later again, and I don't know how much that continued to hurt or what's going on with him, but I wouldn't put it past them to have a good match, but it will probably feel slowish. It will be a really, really interesting mesh because you've got Waller who's in there and he can really go, but he can't call a match like Shawn the Hell Michaels can. And Shawn can call a match like nobody else. And, but he's going to have to rely on Waller to do a lot of the heavy lifting. So it'll be really interesting, assuming this is where they're going, and I do assume that, Bruce.
Oh, yeah. The first thing I wrote in my report tonight after that segment was, this is definitely leading to Stand and Deliver, right, the two of them. And I wrote also, he's going to get the rope from Shawn Michaels, and hey, it's nice because it won't be a Saudi rope, too. So getting that out the way will kind of, I have to believe that Shawn Michaels doesn't really want that to be kind of the lasting legacy that he has, where his last match was Saudi Arabia in a pitiful. I didn't watch the match, but from everything I've heard, it was a pitiful, awful match for everyone that has to actually sit through it and watch it. So Waller is someone who can create all that movement for Michaels. And you know, with the Shawn Michaels match, it's going to be 20 minutes of just sell time and downtime. So that will at least help Shawn Michaels get through it if his cardio isn't up to task. Beyond that, I don't know where else you can go with this angle, how it's been played out. So it makes more sense why Waller didn't win at Vengeance Day because of how they've had this plan out. But if the end game isn't to have Waller versus Michaels, then I don't know what the point of doing all this really is, especially because, as you said, there really isn't a proxy you can have out there for Michaels to defend him against Waller, I guess Sean Waltman is out there, but I don't know what ring condition he's in. Beyond that, I really don't know.
He had a match this year, and it was good.
Okay. So you could do Sean Waltman. He'd come back and be like, I used to be like you. I could do all the stuff about the cocky, arrogant kid, all the stuff. You could play into all that, right? Or you could have someone from... even though it would be more of a stretch, from Black and Gold, who really influenced him to then come up, like a Johnny Gargano to come back, and be the proxy against Waller. But I really do think the best option is to go with Michaels versus Waller at Stand and Deliver, have that match, of course Waller goes over, gets the rub. I do think also that a lot of times these work shoot aspects can be very bad, I guess, for lack of a better term. But I like how they did this tonight with Waller and Michaels, because unlike the usual where it's someone just in the ring or you have the pipe bomb or something, this seemed like it was enough of a disruption to the natural flow of things that I felt like it played its role in a good way. Because, Jane, the focus was on JC Jane at first, making her entrance for her promo, but you see Waller to the side in the background yelling in Gorilla, and then they cut to the camera there, and Matt Bloom as the back Waller off and take him away, and Michaels is there just like yelling and, you know, cut the break, and they immediately cut the break. There's no fanfare about it. So I feel like they, in terms of a work shoot, this one worked well for the spot of time it was given to do that. And then they played the selfie video from Twitter later with Grayson Waller being escorted out of the arena. He goes, I can't even get changed. And, you know, I just thought that was hilarious that, you know, he's so upset that Dree, even though he got caught cheating, and that led to him losing in a fair way. So I wrote my report. This match was a very good distillation of these two characters, of who they are as through an in-ring match. You know, Bate with his whimsical British wrestling, but also powerful, you know, big, strong boy, his technical acumen, and Waller having all that potential athleticism and then resorting to cheating and still losing, but then finding some way to blame others for his loss. I think the first match was a great opener in terms of the story told and the match itself.
Yeah, lots of things tonight were competent. I'm looking down list. I'm like, yeah, I didn't dislike anything. It just felt disjointed. I don't know. But this really probably, yeah, this was probably my favorite part of the show right here. So, Ryan, go ahead.
Heavy question on Vaughn. Wagner, Robert Stone, do you possibly see a match between those two, or do you think they're going to have a game plan where Vaughn gets a renewed push where they finally get on the same page together?
You know, I thought about this more than I thought I would, and I'm not sure I have that answer yet. I don't know. It seems like with Vaughn, there's never really a long-term plan, but they always know they want to feature him in some way. So he shows up, he gets a match that ostensibly is a big one for him, but he's never in big matches that have any build other than, you know, multi-man matches. And he ends up losing, all the big ones. Ever since Solo Sikoa, I don't know that he's won a major singles match. I just can't think of one. So it's a tough place to be when you've lost so much that they actually have to start telling the story that you're losing all the time. I don't know why the branding of Help Me Help You is so specific, and I guess, you know, it's referential and everything like that, but it just seems like they're going for a comedy that's not there. I don't know what I'm supposed to be taking out of this scene. I think that they're going to get on the same page because I don't think they're going to use Robbie E as a wrestler. I think that he's going to remain Robert Stone. They could be writing him out, I guess. But I've thought that about him before, and I was wrong. So I'm just going to go with they are going to get them on the same page and make this a renewed push, and then the push will last a couple of weeks before he loses another big match, and then we're back at square one. I hate to say it, that's just what I see happening with the Von Wagner character. And I mean, for the length of his career, I think that losing big matches is going to be what he is about. Bruce,
I think the biggest detriment tonight to him was that somehow you would think he'd have at least with Wesley, he'd have a competent match where he could use Lee's movement and bumping ability to his advantage. But so many things from Wagner tonight showed a lot of light. Nothing looked really, and it was just a standard, 4.5 minute match. It was a short match that he even got the jump on Wesley and still lost in clean fashion. So I don't know. They obviously something in him that we do not, because we've been saying stuff like this for the last several years about him. I think the Help Me Help You line, it's funny because Cam had retweeted something that he tweeted from a couple years ago about asexuals or whatever, and WWE draws and wonder why you don't have any women or whatnot. And he looks at God and wonder why, and he's like, help him help you. So basically I was saying this was another variation of that. I think, look, unless we start seeing Vaughn Wagner doing different gimmicks every week to try and find out who he is, and I don't know what the point of this is. I want to see that because it would be highly entertaining to me to see Von Wagner just come out looking like Slam Master J one week and come out looking like, Cowboy James Storm another week. He comes out another week looking like The Undertaker. Just switch it up because whatever they do is going to be better than whatever they're doing right now with Von Wagner. So he's going to wrestle, like you said, and I think that's good for him. Save yourself bumps. That's better on your body. I think what's lost here is the fact that Dijak came out and took out D'Angelo before the match, and it looked like Stax was actually the one who was going to be the challenger, which in my report, when they mentioned the open challenge, I wondered if it would be Stax, because he motioned like he was going to go to the ring, but then he went to go help his boss. So we still have that story going on, and I do wonder if the plan is to eventually have Stax be the challenger maybe at Roadblock with Lee to maybe give him a real big test and see if he passes and if they can move on with him to better or more high-profile matches. And I guess that also would determine where Tony D'Angelo might fall in the pecking order as well.
Yeah, Stax for me is kind of outgrowing the need for Tony D. I don't think that is what they thought was going to happen. But that is certainly what I'm seeing.
Well, to be fair, they thought it was going to be a tag team and not having to rely on Stax being sold so much.
Right. Still don't know a whole lot about that situation, but maybe one of these days he'll walk out of the river. Ryan.
Heavy question on Kiana James and her supposed brother, Zach. Does this Zach guy look familiar to you? Like, or do you think he was just have like a casting call? And do you think it's potentially really her lover instead of her brother?
Huh. You know, I wish I wasn't thinking about these scenes, but they threw a lot of them at us. So I guess I have to. When I saw him, I thought briefly that I recognized him, but I think that he just is kind of an everyman. He doesn't look like somebody who would be a sibling of Kiana James, but also really doesn't look like somebody that they would have playing the lover of Kiana James. I think that would make it a stud. And this guy was just a dude. As far as was there a casting call for this guy? I'm going to say I hope not, because I think there are better actors available pretty much in any given city. They didn't ask much of him, and he still didn't do very well. But yeah, he wasn't asked to do much. He's probably I think he's probably a grip or a stagehand or something like that. There's a chance he's an actor, and what I'm saying is real mean, but he chose to deliver the line that way, so I don't know what else to say to finish this sentence. I think that this is a brother, but I certainly don't think the bad behavior of Kiana is anywhere near finished, and this is just a bump in the road getting us where we are going to continue to go, Bruce.
Oh, ye of little faith. Just ask Kiana James, ask Fallon Helly tonight, when are you going to trust me? I'm glad you brought up the brothers acting, because the biggest thing I took away from his spot was that he stared directly at James and made no acknowledgement of the three people surrounding her, including two large dudes just kind of standing there imposing on him. So that I think that was just why I was like, what the hell is going on? But I hear you laughing because, yeah, that spot was pretty bad. But I will say when this phone call first happened and she said, I love you, Zach, a couple weeks ago, I said it was probably her brother, and I like that I'm vindicated and that I would like being right. Sometimes I have some vanity. Sometimes. So I don't think that he's secretly her lover. What I think this is leading to is one of two things. Either this becomes the storyline impetus for the two of them to actually become formidable tag team, even though it seems like Isla Dawn and Alba Fire are set to beat them. or what I think is more likely is right when she feels like, or right when Henley feels like she has full trust of James, James is going to turn on her and they're going to have a feud. That's more likely. But either way, that segment itself was the best part of the segment, I will say. It was his best bit of acting ever, was when Jensen just walked away dejected and didn't even respond to Henley and just and Briggs, his one line, really? That was perfect.
And my favorite part of their whole segments on the night was Briggs demonstrating the 90-10. By far. And Briggs was able to play it straight. Brooks could not keep a straight face.
Yep,
he gave it
yep.
a shot. And they probably had to do several takes for it, but he simply couldn't do it all the way. He had just a tiny grin. Permagrin is what we call it in the business. When somebody smiles at something funny that is happening on stage that they're involved in, permagrin. And Brooks had a little bit of permagrin there. But hey, who can blame him? He did not get into wrestling thinking that he would have to do a 90-10 with a guy even bigger than he is. Ryan, if you got one more, go ahead, and then we'll move on to the next caller at 914.
Yeah, got a question on Ava Rain and Tia Hill. I know NXT has been doing a lot of weird tag teams. Do you possibly see them as tag team champions sometime this year?
Huh. I hadn't thought of that. But with these two factions, I'm never sure how much thought they put into them or if this is just the spare parts that they write at the end of an episode and say, hey, it's always fun when we have Chase U on and Schism is also on the roster. So, you know, we could put them on. this is the feud that I kind of forget is happening until it starts happening every week. I don't know why that is, but it doesn't – like Chase U shows up. I don't even think of the Schism right now. But, yeah, I think that this is probably more a developmental piece for Ava Rain, who they want to probably give as many opportunities as they can before they find out whether she can sink or swim. I think – that it will result in Thea Hale maybe being thought of as the bigger deal, but the match today wasn't great. Thea Hale versus Tiffany Stratton. Tiff wins in 3:26. Does she gain anything from it? I don't know, because it was not about her at all. It was about Thea getting distracted and taking offense from Tiffany as a result. Because the Schism was everywhere in the arena. Well, they were in the three places that wrestlers always are when they distract people. So I don't think that this is a tag team waiting to happen, especially on the heels of Fallon Henley and Kiana James. But if there's something that they can't deny about their interactions together, they'll do it. And I can't deny that on paper, the idea of the ultra excitable Thea Hale and the deadpan cold Ava Rain is funny. I mean, that could be funny, but Ava Rain's got a lot of, she's got to improve a lot on the mic and as a character before that can really work as well as it possibly could, Bruce.
Yeah. And I don't think it's going to lead to a tag team. What I said last week is I believe this is all meant to lead to Ava Rain's first match in a mixed tag team match between Andre Chase and Thea Hale with her and Joe Gacy as a way to basically do the Ronda Rousey, right? Make sure that she has a more controlled environment to have her first match, one that has less stakes, and one where she can come in, do what she does well, get her feet wet in terms of her first match experience, and then use that time to let us know who she is as a wrestler and as a wrestling character in the ring, and then there I think you're going to go more into Ava Raine as a full-fledged character. But I do think what this is for Thea Hale to be kind of the fall girl for Ava Raine to get the first pin in that mixed tag team match.
All right, Ryan, we thank you. As always, 914, you are next. I am sure that I've put you on the show multiple times, but I don't know where all my notes are. So belittle me by reminding me who you are.
It's Brad. How you doing? This and forgive me, you're Tom and that's Bruce, correct?
So close. I'm Kelly and that's Bruce.
Nate.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Yes, that's... Oh, we're all so close. you were one of the ones I would guess.
You're Kelly. Kelly, my bad, man. Kelly, honestly, I don't know what's wrong with me. We were all messing up tonight a little bit with the names, but we're good. So on the Robert Stone thing that Ryan just brought up, I'm pretty sure this was a way to write him off and get him into the main roster as Chelsea Green's manager. I know the two have a connection, and I know that I saw something that there was like a graphic that Chelsea Green had when she came to the ring on Raw or SmackDown the other, I forget what it was, but where she, it was like the Robert Stone graphic or something that they accidentally put up on the big screen. Do you think that that's where they're going with this, and that was the end of Robert Stone in NXT, and he's going with Chelsea Green?
That wouldn't surprise me. I didn't know that happened, but now that I know that happened, I'm going to go ahead and co-sign to that idea, because tonight's – what they've been doing with these two feels like a way to write out Robert Stone, but I also didn't understand why, if they were writing him out, they were giving him so much TV time. But that absolutely would track. Bruce, did you see the moment that he's referring to?
Not the graphic, but they do have a history, and I guess, I mean, Mr. Stone, I think, is definitely a benefit to NXT more so than, I guess, you know, Robbie E. Robert Stone, more so than Von Wagner is. I definitely do see him being a valuable piece on Raw. They always have had room for that kind of goofy, funky manager. You know, they just got rid of JBL for Baron Corbin, so it wouldn't be – and they have Maximum Male Models, and they have – what do they call her? Maxine Dupri and whatnot. So there's always room and space for these sorts of characters on Raw and SmackDown. That does make sense. It just means that there would be more Chelsea Green on TV. And yeah.
Yep, that's not a good end game. You know, I wasn't going to talk about – I wasn't going to talk shit about – Chelsea Green, but it's really hard to not because she's just not very good. Brad, go ahead.
Thanks, Kel. You know, we were talking about Shawn Michaels. I know we're not talking about the main roster, but I really see a Montreal screw job coming for Sami Zayn. I cannot see how they don't recreate it after we saw, you know, the recreation of the Rockers breakup, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And I just think that that's going to happen at Elimination Chamber. I think, you know, Paul Heyman's going to pay off the ref or something like that. I digress, but I thought, and maybe I missed a segment because my son has a little bit of a fever and I was kind of running back and forth throughout the night. But I thought that this was a way to just write Grayson Waller, like kick him out of NXT, almost like what happened with Santos Escobar in a certain way and get him to the main roster, because it feels like there's nothing left for him to do, and he's so good in my opinion. And I just, you know, when Shawn Michaels said get him out, that's it, go to commercial, get him out, I thought that that was like, you're not going to see Grayson Waller on this show anymore, and then he shows up on SmackDown one night or, you know, whatever. Is it possible at all that that's the direction, or did I miss a segment where they are setting up a match for these two at Stand and Deliver?
You didn't miss a segment. That is us kind of filling in blanks. Whether or not that match happens, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that this is the end of Grayson Waller's tenure in NXT. He's going to go up never having been a champion, but he can still be, and I think easily could be, depending on how title change happy they continue to be in the next couple of years, because they haven't been in the last couple of years. I think that he could be one of those mid-level championship holders. I think that he's going to be written out, and I think that this storyline with Sean is the way to do that. I hadn't given any thought to the idea that maybe he would not be having a match to actually do this. But now that they've teased that, I wonder if people will be a little annoyed if that's not what happens. But I'm assuming the match until I see otherwise. But regardless, I agree with all your points, including the value I think that he can bring to the main roster. And I think that this is a way to get – I don't think he'll be in NXT fixture 3 months from now, Bruce.
Us and our very accurate predictions on who's no longer going to be on NXT and moving on to the main roster. We are just absolutely great at that. Make yeah. your bets right. Make your bets right now, because we definitely, if you bet on wrestling, that's your own issue. But we definitely always get them right. That aside, so the thing that one of the reasons we're making the jump to the match is because of the things that have happened since Vengeance Day. It's not just this tonight's interaction between these two that lead me to believe that something is happening. The post-meetup press conference call, you know, the kayfabe call, tonight, the suspension. I feel like all that has to be leading up to something more so than just Waller being written off TV. I just don't feel like, and now that people are thinking about it, I don't know how much my report has to do with that, but now that people are thinking about it, I feel like to just take it away by having him debut on Raw or SmackDown is such a letdown. And I think the better way to debut him would be to have him get the win at Stand and Deliver and then have him debut on the Raw after Mania. So if you're going to have him debut, I feel like you have to go through with this match. You can't just write him off TV. I felt like him saying, get him out of here, he's out, was to say that he's out and he's done for tonight, because we've seen that happen with so many times. I feel like every time Austin was escorted out by cops, Vince McMahon was saying, you're done. And it was just for that night. You know, it was never for next week. So I think that I feel like you have to go through with the match. I just feel like after everything that has happened between these two, not having it would be promotional malpractice. So I would say that the match is going to happen. Waller's going to win. He'll debut being the arrogant, cocky guy, talking about how he defeated Shawn Michaels and he's here, yada, yada, yada. And then, boom, someone comes out. He has his first feud. So I think it all plays well for him. And I don't think there are any issues if you do it that way. Though I do think if you do debut him without going through with the match, then you are definitely doing yourself a disservice.
By the way, promotional malpractice, that'll be the name of Robert Stone's brand on the main roster. I like the sound of promotional malpractice.
To be fair, I got that from noted MMA report. I guess, analyst Luke Thomas, who is also a noted professional wrestling hater. So just to give credit where credit is due, promotional malpractice comes from Luke Thomas.
Well, we done stole it from him, and
it's wrestling after
pro
all.
Wrestling. That is what pro wrestling's about.
Mm-hmm.
Brad, if you got one more, go ahead.
Yeah, that is a great name, promotional malpractice. That's terrific. I think, you know, he didn't really use it in a meaningful way, that MMA guy. So, you know, it's no problem with taking it. I don't know how you guys really feel about JC Jane, but I loved what she did tonight. Like, not just liked. She is so confident, and she is such a jerk. And I think that there's a lot of value in that. You know, being able to be so unbelievably just into yourself and so unbelievably tone deaf to, you know, kind of what everyone's thinking around you, like almost like Grayson Waller is. Like, he doesn't give a damn what anyone thinks, and The Miz is kind of like that. And I really feel like it's such a great quality, and she looked amazing tonight. Just physically, she looked amazing. But regardless of that, like, she was – I just thought that promo was really good. And I understand she's young and she's growing and she has a lot to learn, but I feel like she even fought back the crowd a lot, and she just kept on doing her thing. And I forget, honestly, what her big line was that, you know, about JC – about – Gigi and why, you know, she should be on top and Gigi's a loser. But whatever it was, it came across really good to me. And I just thought she was the best part of the show. And I also did like Thea Hale tonight, guys. I think she is like a comedian. I think she's very, very funny with the unbelievable levels of enthusiasm and the scared faces and everything she does. She's so passionate in getting into her character and doing what she does. And I know she's only 19 years old or whatever she is, but I don't know. I think she's got a lot of potential. I find her very likable. And to me, the three standouts on the show tonight were JC Jane, Thea Hale, and Tiffany Stratton, just because she's so good in the ring. Like, her moves and her moveset is so incredible. And I know that match wasn't about her, but she's just so damn good. And I wanted your guys' thoughts on those three, particularly JC Jane. I know you touched on Thea a little bit, but JC Jane, I want to know what you really thought of her promo and how she conducted herself during that, because, again, I personally, maybe I'm missing something, but I thought she was phenomenal.
You're not missing something. I just can't believe that it's there. Because when she started, she was awful. She was awful. Her first promo was not in the – it was pre-taped. And it was so bad, I was like, they didn't have to air this. Like, it was pre-taped. So it's interesting and fitting. Just a happy coincidence that you mentioned JC and Thea in the same breath, because they both have what – they drill into you as first-year acting students, which is fearlessness. They go out there and they are committed to the bit, and they are not afraid. They're unafraid enough to fail that they're willing to – you either fail big or – because if you fail half-assed, it's obvious you're not giving it anything. You're not giving your whole heart into it. Thea, we saw that right away, and I said, if she can make this even just a little bit real, she's going to be one of my favorite parts of this show. And she's made it just real enough that she's one of my favorite parts of the show. I'm giddy when I see her. Like, she makes me happy, and it really works. And JC, I wouldn't have guessed 2 months ago that we'd ever see her on this level, because for me, she really was always the other one. In this group, she always was. And last week I said, I don't know if Gigi is worthy of this spot exactly, but I can say that tonight was the best night she has ever had as a solo act, like far and away. And tonight I didn't think was as strong as last week. I didn't think it was as fearless, but it also wasn't the great big moment of last week. As a follow-up to last week, I thought this was very good. I thought it was very smart not to have Gigi on this show at all, other than to sell the injuries to the face, showing the bruising on her cheek. I thought that all worked. I think this angle is dynamite, and I can't believe I'm saying that. I can't believe how well it's working. JC is becoming a testament to what this brand is about, because I did not see coming out of her. I just didn't, and yet it's there, Bruce.
As she said in her promo tonight, everyone saw her as the third wheel of the cog, and I mean, in-ring, she definitely was a third wheel. Promo, she definitely was a third wheel. I did write tonight was definitely her best promo, but I mean, there wasn't far. It was a low bar. There wasn't much to clear in that regard. But beyond, you know, she had a lot of conviction. She was confident. She put over what she needed to put over. I think adding in those real life discussions that wrestling fans are having about toxic attraction, about her position in that group, was a nice touch because it added a sense of not just realism, but relatability. Because I'm sure there are people out there who are in groups and they feel like they're, you know, the third of third, the fifth of fifth, the seventh of seventh, whatever it might be. And having her kind of make a comment to that probably is one way that people can find something about her. To me, it was one of those promos where, and this is kind of what happened with Jinder Mahal and Bron Breakker, we'll get to later, where the heel was just assholish enough for you to not like what, to get to not really like them, but there was enough reality in their statements that you understand where they're coming from. And that's the kind of heel you want to have. Those are the best heels because at least it's rooted in something that is believable, that is better than just, oh, I don't like you because I'm a bad guy and I don't like people. Like, that's pretty dumb. So having this here, I think, was a good way to kind of set the context for what is going to be their feud. And what I did know is that at the very end, she said, I'm the last woman standing out of the three people in Toxic Attraction. So I think this might lead to a Toxic Attraction, or I guess the two members who are left, a last woman standing match. And then when it comes to Thea Hale, yeah, from the very beginning, we said she has so much energy. She has so much. It's all there. They just need to – it's better to have someone like that where you can bring it back a little bit than where you have to have someone to bring it up. And I think she's playing her part well in terms of the jumpy, scared character. But, this match, I really hate those matches that are just angles, and this match was just an angle, which took away from – what I think, there was a bit of miscommunication in the beginning, but, you know, Tiffany Stratton just keeps looking better and better, and that triple springboard BME that she does as her new finisher, it's just a very, very nice, majestic moonsault. Looks good. I wish there was less of an angle for this match, and if there was going to be this much of an angle, I wish that they had someone else as the opponent rather than Tiffany Stratton.
I definitely don't hate matches that are just angles, but, man, it seems like they're doing a lot of them.
Yes, yes.
A whole lot of them. And I understand the choice to have Tiffany here, because if you don't have another story beat for her, then, I mean, it's not a terrible thing to have her just pick up a win, even though it's not about her. But you don't want to give her a lot of face time where she, even in a win, isn't the star of the show. Because I think you can do some pretty special things with Tiffany down the road. Brad, thank you as always. An excellent call. So let us go. Oh, you know what? I had Darrell on and now he's gone. So,
put him to sleep again, didn't we?
I think we might have. Darrell's got an interesting set of feelings about the former members of Toxic Attraction. So maybe the fact that we kind of turned around on JC Jane tonight wasn't feeling it. I don't know. I don't know, folks. No, he likely just decided he had to go to bed. Okay. So let's talk a few more segments and then we will move on out of here. Axiom defeats Damon Kemp in 3:31 with a thrust kick. You know, Axiom has been consistently pushed as a winner, and I yet almost always am surprised that he wins a match. I don't know why that is. Like, they tell us repeatedly that this guy is a genuine, they see real superstar potential in him. And that's what he did. He just came back and beat Damon Kemp. 3:31, he beats Damon Kemp. Charlie Dempsey beats Hank Walker in 1:41 with an armbar. After all that, that's it for Hank Walker and Drew Gulak. In retrospect, having a heel feuding with a babyface who was managed by a heel it probably should have been obvious where this was headed. I'm not sure that Charlie Dempsey needs Drew Gulak, but I am sure that that pairing will be fun, and I'm sure that I will enjoy it. So so I'm not sad. So, yeah, that's what that is. As far as matches, those are the only two we haven't touched on. Bruce?
Yeah, so Axiom Kemp, I'm surprised you were shocked because Axiom is definitely higher on the card than Kemp is. So having Kemp win here would be very random. The golden ratio is one of my favorite signatures, finishers recently, just because of how much he really puts his effort into it, makes it look like he really wants to kick your head off. Favorite moves on that note, I will say Waller's flip somersault unprettier, quickly becoming my favorite move in all of professional wrestling. The ability to do that and still be able to underhook the arms and land the unprettier while you're flipping, that is just, unparalleled athleticism and skill right there. That's just
– And it's a great move for counters too. Like, so if the other person counters it, it just looks great all around.
It's funny because he took John Cena's throwback and made it better. So going back to Kemp and Axiom, I think Axiom is going to have a huge 2023 coming off of the Iron Survival Challenge and how he keeps getting wins. He's consistently on TV, and I love his deadpan response when it comes to the comparisons to A-Kid, watching the A-Kid videos, people talking about A-Kid to him. I think when I talked about this with Nate one show that you weren't on, I mentioned how it's weird that he's one of those few people where putting the mask on actually made him more charismatic and endearing and a better character than him with the mask off. So I feel like he's going to have a big, big 2023. I'm really looking forward to that because he has a really fun style, a really fan-friendly style. And I think while we had questions about this character at first, mostly just questions because we wanted to see how it was implemented and executed, I think what he's done and how he's implemented the sort of aspects of that, of the smart analytical character into his wrestling is very good. And I think if he's not a North American champion sometime this year or early 2024, then something really went wrong, either backstage or just maybe he's injured or something. When it comes to Dempsey and Walker, right when Hank gets some new gear and Gulak gives him the boots to use, he gets turned on by Gulak to partner with Dempsey. I do like Dempsey's finisher, that little modified sort of face wrench, leg wrench combo he does. It really looks nasty, just how he kind of rubs his forearm into the face. I do think that for you and me, this duo is going to be just wrestling nirvana for us because this is the type of wrestling that we really love. And just watching them stretch people is going to make me it's going to bring joy to my heart.
Yes, you are correct about how I feel about this. Bron Breakker was in the crossover segment, in a major segment there, and had a war of words with Jinder Mahal, which was won by Jinder Mahal, clearly. Two callers, 8 questions. Bron Breakker never mentioned. Seems like a bad sign that your champion was not a topic of conversation for any of our callers, even though he had an angle that I guess you could posture as major. But this was this. I hate to say it, but this segment was Bron at his worst. He just yelled stuff out, and when he was overwhelmed, which was all of the time, he seemed frazzled. Now, it's clear that they were going for the John Cena reaction because they started showing signs that says Bron sucks immediately. So it's clear that this is the story they wanted to tell with Jinder because they know there's backlash. And Jinder's line was, there's backlash against you now. And I'm like, now? He's never been particularly good, and people have disliked him the whole time. He's just a serviceable meathead mid-card guy who's being positioned on the top of a show for a surprisingly long amount of time. But yeah, it's next week he'll drive through Jinder Mahal, and that'll be that. I mean, is that going to be the end of Jinder Mahal on the brand? I can't believe that we're going to that right away, that that's just a tiny stopgap on the way to Carmella.
Yeah. Again, going back to what we were saying with JC Jane, this is one of those promos where a lot of the stuff the heel was saying was, you could understand where they're coming from, but then they're just smarmy enough to where you want to be like, ooh, I don't want to root for you. But then the opposite, it's Braun Breaker. So you kind of have, it's a lose-lose situation in terms of the fans here. Who are you going to cheer for? The match to end, that's what I'm going to cheer for. So when we look at how this unfolded, like you said, it was Braun Breaker at his worst. Every response that he had to Jinder Mahal, I mean, even from the moment he opened his mouth before Mahal interrupted him, it was just yelling and yelling and yelling. Every response was a yell. And he's like, I'm a simple guy. We obviously understand that, Braun. You don't need to remind us about that. And like you said, two callers, eight questions, not a single question about your top champion in the company. We have forgotten routinely over the past year, if you combine his first and second runs, who the men's NXT champion has been, because he's just not entertaining, not memorable. There's been very little progression, and when it seems like there has been progression, there's been regression almost immediately, and not just a simple smooth regression, but a hard regression that really just it's not good for Braun Breaker. I guess that's the best way to put it. The more I see Waller, the more I feel like they should have made him champion. They should have made, who did he face before? I'm already forgetting his.
Apollo Crews was, I think, the last one before.
Okay, maybe not Apollo. Basically, his feud didn't, his reigns, or his reign, his second reign hasn't helped in terms of the people he's feuded with, because Joe Gacy was one of them, and Apollo Crews, while fantastic in the ring, not the greatest on the mic. It's just, all we know about Braun Breaker is he's a simple man who's the son of Rick Steiner, the nephew of Scott Steiner, and he likes to fish, and he likes to yell. Who is Braun Breaker? I think Mr. Stone needs to be asking him that, because, again, we don't really know who he is. And I think you can have any other choice or any other decision than to have Carmelo Hayes be the one to defeat him. But again, or ask and deliver. But then this comes back to our earlier conversations about Carmelo Hayes. Why is he even on the roster to begin with anymore? He should be on Raw or SmackDown. He doesn't need to be NXT Men's Champion. He doesn't, you know, he had that amazing North American Championship run, which was basically like John Cena having his United States Championship run when whoever was champion during that time. I think, we're just not fans of Braun Breaker. Oh, and Jinder Mahal.
Yep.
I don't think it's the end of him on NXT, because I think there's more to do with Indusher, unless after he loses next week, they turn on him and lay him out in the middle of the ring, which I think could be a possibility, because why would they sit there? And yeah, he's a former WWE champion, but what have you done for me lately kind of thing. And that could be a route they go, but if they don't next week, then I believe he's going to stick around and help Indusher become tag team champion.
Yeah. I had something to say about Braun, but then it all just made me sad. And I don't remember what it was. Just something about, you know, I think it's it was that in the wake of me saying some of the stuff I did on the podcast with Wade, because we talked a little bit about NXT on the Dynamite post show. And then a couple people messaging me after my recap, just like, but obviously they wanted to save Braun versus Carmelo versus for Stand and Deliver. And I was like, dude, I don't have a problem with Carmelo being in that match. Like, that's not the problem. I don't think Braun is worthy of being in that championship spot at Stand and Deliver. Like, and people are like, he's the champion, so therefore he deserves to be there. But I just don't think he's worthy of the spot.
The Great Khali is champion, so he deserves to be in the main event at WrestleMania.
Yeah. That's
kind of that.
I think people just take it as a matter of course because he's been champion for a year. But,
it's been the most unmemorable year of an NXT champion I can ever remember. And that's including Raquel Gonzalez's reign.
I mean, that's – we've got real competition there. We really do. All right, we got a segment about Sol Ruca. We learned some stuff about her, and I liked it. It was very simple, but I thought it was pretty effective. Apollo Crews threw down his journal. He is so tired of misspelling words on camera that he threw it away so we couldn't see him do it anymore, and he cut a little promo on Dabba Kato. I don't know if this was a visual representation that they're giving up the journal part of his, but I wouldn't be surprised. Gallus and Pretty Deadly played pool, and I won't lie, it was one of my favorite parts of the show. I really, really liked, I knew I'd like Pretty Deadly in this, but I really liked Gallus in this as well, especially them taking all of, getting super sloshed on Pretty Deadly's dime and then just saying, oh yeah, we'll give you a match. Like after all that, like Pretty Deadly's trying to sucker them into a match and doesn't realize that, that they don't have to. So, Ilya Dragunov, Trick Williams, JD McDonagh, stuff's going to happen there, folks. And it's going to happen soon. So Bruce.
Trick Williams is a gift to professional wrestling. I'll leave it at that. The Gallus Pretty Deadly segment was also one of my favorites. I love how Pretty Deadly comes in there and they're like, you know what? We can definitely get the guys who spend entire days at the pub drunk enough to give us a match. Yeah, let's do that. And I just love how they went through 7 pints and they're like, I don't think they're sloshed at all. I think they're just like, yeah, whatever. And they kept winning and winning all the matches. And I feel like that was the point to show that this is what they do all the time. They're not going to get sloshed from drinking 7 pints of beer while they're playing pool. Or billiards or whatever they called it. And I think it was a little a slight at the New Day, though. Like, you could have just asked us for a match. We're not the New Day. I was like, oh, that's a bit of a stray there. But it's also true because New Day did make them go through a bunch of hoops to get a title match, which ended up being a fatal four-way. So when it comes to what they're doing, I think, again, I said the first match was a great encapsulation of the two wrestlers as characters in the ring. This was a great encapsulation of the four of them as a team and as individuals throughout this. I thought it was great how Wolfie was the one talking the most smack during all of it because we don't really hear him on the mic too much. And Joe was kind of the more stoic one, Mark was kind of the more stoic one this time. I think it's sort of a little more layers to that team, but great segment. All four did what they were supposed to do. Pretty Deadly going back to being their chipper selves and being very flamboyant in how they play was also a nice sight to see. Let's see. What was the one you said before that I missed?
Oh, what was it? I crossed them all out now. So now I got to look at my crossed out lines.
We did miss some backstage segments with, you know, how
someone out there yelling at me. Yo, you know what? I wanted to throw that in too, because Bernal's scenes are, they go hard with them. So they either really hit or they really miss. I thought it was pretty funny that he went after Tatum with this pre-thought-out series of lines. When it failed, he did not even leave the room before giving the same lines to Ivy Nile, who is getting pretty good at being Ivy Nile, to be honest. Just save it.
Put him right into the Dragon Slayer. I was like, say it again. I was like, yes.
Immediately. And then Ivy and Tatum talked to the floor because the floor wanted to tell them that they were, Yeah, that was a weird looking. Like, that was not something that wrestling does very often. So it was real bizarre seeing that, because they usually make it embarrassingly obvious what is happening. That was odd, to the point of saying, like, somebody had to have COVID or something, like, to not be there, because why else would they not? Why would they not be there? That is not me breaking news. I do not know, and I do not believe that's actually the case.
Did you actually hear what they were, what Isla Dawn and Alba Fire were saying?
I don't know. Did I?
I
didn't write it down.
I could not make out anything they were saying over the speaker.
Yeah, I didn't write it down. So all I know, I was mostly just tickled by the fact that that they were listening to the floor. It was great. What did I say before that? Saul Ruka's segment.
Right. Yeah, this was, in terms of really starting to develop a new babyface character who you see a lot of potential in, and of course we all see a lot of potential in her too. This was A to B in the best way possible, showed pictures of her family, and yes, she is biracial. So people who are like, Sol Ruka in Black History Month tweet and I see what's going on. She is half black. I laughed when Cam tweeted, what if Fallon Henley goes up to Jensen and her reveal is that Kiana James is actually black. And people were just on Twitter like, Cam, come on, man. But, you know, she talked about her gymnastics background, how her parents really helped push her, how being in the ring, I thought this was a key line from her, and it was really early. But it was that being in the wrestling ring allows me to be creative and the free will that I am. And I think that's a good way to set this character up, instead of just kind of the assumption that, oh, as this surfer girl, people are just going to assume that, yada, yada, yada. I think really laying out there in explicit terms who you are and why you do this is a great base to start your character. Nothing about this segment with Sol Ruka, I think, was bad. I think it's just setting her up to be a massive, massive babyface moving forward. And I think one of the big money matches for NXT, either end of this year, maybe early next year, with Stand and Deliver or something, is going to be a very improved, possibly women's champion Tiffany Stratton versus a challenger Sol Ruka.
Indeed. Only other thing I mentioned was Cruz ditching the journal, but I don't know if there's anything more there. So.
I'm just glad he threw the journal down.
Me too. In the next scene, he'll pull out his own eyes and throw them down.
Or maybe he'll burn the diner he always goes to.
Yeah. Wow. We got a diner. We got a bar. We see a lot of both of them. So they can't get rid of their choices, because it seems like we only got the two. Did we get any emails? You can email us at PWTorch. What is it? PWTorchNXT@gmail.com. Sure that. The doctor is in. This is Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. First, a general thought with Elimination Chamber coming up this week. I find myself really missing takeovers, and I hope we see something akin to that come back soon. What percentage likelihood do you put on stadium caliber shows coming back to NXT? I mean, I feel like we're kind of there. I think we were there last time. I just don't think that Vengeance Day was really all that. I thought it was fine. I thought it was a decent show. But if he's saying he just misses really, really great shows that also had great wrestling on NXT, I would say we're not likely to see a lot more of them, because we're seeing people in the developmental stages again, rather than this being a super indie. Lastly, with regard to Braun, what do you think is more likely and why? That someone will beat him before he gets called up, or that he'll pull an Asuka and relinquish the title before he goes to the main roster? Oh, that would tick me off, especially because he's not even defeated. Dolph beat him already. Thanks, as always. Go VIP, especially during Mania season. And listen to 8YB and Bonus Point. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Bruce?
Yeah, so on Breaker real quick, and then I'll hit the – like you said, he's already lost. this is not someone whose reign is worthy of. Asuka was having just feud after feud, match after match that was just fire. It's just so good. Everything she did, she grew as a character. She developed. She kind of fully fleshed out who she was in NXT. Haven't seen any of that with Breaker. So I would, excuse me, definitely be against that. Yeah, he definitely has to lose before he goes up. And then I already forgot what he said about what his first question was or his first point was. And that's me. But yeah, I think whatever he asked, he probably already discussed anyway, so we can move on.
The other email, you know what? Let's see. Yeah, takeover level shows. Yeah, this one is from Al. No last name, please. Oh, glad I remembered that at the last moment. Persia Parada debuts in Impact Wrestling. Yes, I was surprised Persia was part of the cutbacks, and I was even more surprised Triple H did not re-sign her. Why do you think she was not re-signed, and what is your opinion of the former NXT talent has signed back? What did you think? That's a separate thing. I thought Persia was okay. I don't know. I didn't have the most glowing thoughts about her work, but I also thought she was cut before she was really given a fair shake. Like, they were talking about the churn, and they were going to get rid of people if they didn't quickly get better. But A, that's a cruel thing to do when you've uprooted people's lives, and B, if they really liked somebody, then it has not mattered if they didn't get any better. They keep them around anyway. So that's annoying. So I didn't think Persia was all